Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnik, Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the vivid world of politics and law that you watch me cover on television every day into the world of theater and the arts. But this is a really special interview because I think those worlds are going to converge in this interview, as we'll see, based on the nature of the show. You'll understand what I mean in just a moment, because we're going to be talking about the amazing play Inherit the Wind, which is playing at the Goodman Theater through October 20th. If you haven't seen it yet, move quick. You got to get tickets. This is just an incredible performance. We're going to talk all about that. I'm not sure. You're all stars and huge here, so I'm not sure what order to go with, but I'll go with the person who started a TV show that begins with the letter B. So we'll go with Harry Lennox. you see, Blacklist. I had to get that in there somehow, Harry. But Harry, you play Henry Drummond in this play. We'll talk about who he really is, but people know you from film, TV, stage. But you've been here before. I mean, you've done August Wilson at the Goodman, and I saw you at Purpose at the Steppenwolf, which is not about the Jackson family, and just so many other great works that it's just so great. And of course, you're a Chicago guy, and that's why we get to see you so much. But I'll be honest, every time I mention you to somebody, Blacklist is where they go. But I think that's okay, because that's a phenomenal show. Yeah. And also joining us, a great talent, Alex Gemignani, who plays Matthew Harrison Brady. Funny, sounds like a real three-name character, maybe from the real world, in the show that we'll talk about. But you are also not just a fine actor that we see, but Alex, I mean, you've done a ton of Broadway stuff, and Sweeney Todd, you're a tenor, you're a singer. I know your mom was a soprano, your dad a musical conductor. Do you consider yourself actor first and the music part second, or is it reversed, or how do you view yourself?
It is all one, Paul.
All right. I gotcha.
Yeah.
And Henry Godinez, who is the master of all, is the resident director at Goodman Theater. But you did Fanny there, and I don't know, you other guys saw him, the play Fanny. That was just amazing. Among all the other stuff that you've done, American Mariachi, you've also at the Marriott, and you are also a professor and chair at Northwestern's Theater Department, which means these actors had to deal with.
Sad. Yes, at times.
And your real claim to fame is our mutual friend, Richard Gabriel, who I'll make sure watches this. So a nod out to Richard. I'm not going to suggest I know anything about this topic or have much background in it, but I am going to put in front of me this autographed copy of The Story of My Life by Clarence Darrow. Autographed by Clarence Darrow. I might just add that in. He signed this back in 1937. And I kind of love all this stuff and I love this play and I couldn't wait to see it. So that's my little plug on the fact that I hope to go deep with you. Henry, I'm going to actually start with the set. I'm going to go in a place which probably should come up later. But first of all, people may know this because it actually was a play initially back in 1955. It was an incredibly famous movie in 1960. Where you had to walk in the footsteps, some would argue, of Stanley Kramer, who directed that movie. But when you walk into this theater, I knew I was in for something special because I had been given a phone call saying, you can't have your regular seats, which are usually right down front and center, Henry, just so you know, Alex and Harry. I couldn't have those. Why couldn't I have those, Henry?
Well, because you've been naughty, Paul. But other than that, you know, one of the first things that I felt strongly about with this play was that this is a play about a community of people that have chosen to stay frozen in time, that have chosen to live a life where they're closed off from with their beliefs from the rest of the world in a way and from the progress of science and so forth. So I felt strongly that we needed to have a here and there, and that reverberates throughout the play for me. I also felt that there's a jury plays very prominently in this play, and first of all, I knew we couldn't spare 12 actors to like be a jury. And besides which, I felt like really the playwright's intention was that we, the audience, the community, the people be the jury. So I approached the Goodman and sheepishly asked if we could actually build out from the stage into the audience so that actors could enter from the house, from the audience, fully expecting a no because it had never been done in the 20 some odd years we've been in the space. Amazingly, they said yes. So, Paul, we had to take your seat away to build a bridge from what we call the apron of the stage out into the middle of the floor of the audience.
And also, by the way, the ceiling, I'm not sure what the name would be for the wooden structure you have placed in the ceiling. Just amazing. Was all of this your planning? Did any of this come from like the original play or anything like that? I doubt it.
No, I mean the impulse comes from the original play, from the what we felt the intention of the playwrights were. No, it came out of a discussion with our scenic designer, Colette Pollard, who's amazing. And she took this, what kind of what I just shared with you, this idea that there is a community that has chosen to stay closed off, frozen in time, if you will. There's a line, a very famous line that these gentlemen exchange at the end of Act One, where, Matthew Harrison Brady says to Drummond, what happened, my friend? We used to be friends. Why, how did we grow so far apart? And Drummond says, maybe it's you that have drifted away by standing still, and so that really resonated with me. So Colette took that notion and created this, well, I don't know what we call it, a cornice piece, but really it's the entire town
Beautiful.
suspended over the playing area, and it's humongous, it's huge.
Yeah.
And the buildings are three-dimensional buildings that are all modeled after the actual buildings in Dayton, Tennessee, where the trial took place. And they're about 3 feet tall. They're huge.
It really is magnificent. So Susan Booth says yes. I'm going to call Bob Falls and see what he would have said just to.
Well, I can tell you what he would have said.
So Harry, you and Alex play. These are real characters. I mean, you are Clarence Darrow. That's why I held up the Clarence Darrow book, who, as a lawyer, I mean, he's just, sort of a god among lawyers in history. And Alex, of course, your character, Matthew, is actually Williams Jennings Bryan. But here's the thing. Let me start with you, Harry. When you play a real life character who the audience would know from relatively recent history or something, that's one kind of challenge. You're playing somebody, you both are, that everybody's probably heard of, I would hope, in school or somewhere, but yet people don't have memories of Clarence Darrow or Williams Jennings Bryan. What kind of homework did you do, Harry, to sort of step into the Clarence Darrow role?
Well, thanks for having me first, Paul. Always good to see you, and to talk to you. By the way, I think that the structure on that in the sky, that sort of sculpture thing, is a diorama. I think it could be technically considered that in any event. But
Henry agrees.
that said, I had a discussion in the wings with one of the actors about this. But I think when a play is done. And I think some degree of indication is with the playwrights naming them other names. I don't think that it is William Jennings Bryan, I think, or Clarence Darrow. I think that they're based on it. I think when you do a play, it becomes its own time and its own place. I don't think that, for example, race plays a role in the way that it did in the original trial, if it played one. I think on some level it did, but not here, not in the same way. It's its own world. It's its own time. And I think that that being the case, of course, my favorite quote, being a former theologian, a seminarian at least, is to study to show yourself approved, it says in 2 Timothy. And that you have to study the relevant materials just in order to know from where we may depart or why, where we might gain some support. Certain things, like he smoked cigars, he was living and loved Chicago, probably was a, drank illegal bathtub gin any chance he got, this kind of thing, I sneak a drink, by the way, in the court at the end of the trial, from a flask, and it's, I don't think anybody notices it, but it's my homage to what Chicago was at that time. This is the time, and Capone was at his heyday, and so forth. So I do a little bit of I do as much study as I can without infringing and making it literal. just like much of what this play is about. We cannot take literally, or try to live word for word or act for act, deed for deed, who these characters are. It's specific to this production.
Well, that is really fascinating to me. You know what? I wasn't really expecting that answer, so that gives me a little twist to what I'm going to go to Alex with. And what I mean by not expecting it is, to me, the character is Clarence Darrow, so I saw him in that light. But I would, I guess, as a lawyer who has studied Darrow. Alex, assuming that your character is at least based, as Harry would say, on Williams Brenning Giant, but here, Williams Jennings Bryan. But here's the thing. There are lines in this play, which I know you know, which were actually said at the trial. It's not as though there's a real connection between some of these lines. And in fact, I never like to give surprises away. So whatever you guys want to disclose, you can. My favorite story is interviewing the cast of Dear Evan Hansen. And I said beforehand, is there anything I shouldn't talk about? And one of the cast members said, well, don't mention that Connor dies. And I went, well, he dies in the first 3 seconds of the show. So I don't know why that is giving anything away, but so be it. So Alice, I won't say what happens to Williams Jennings Bryan, but anybody who's read a history book, I'll just say that your character goes the way of Williams Jennings Bryan, truthfully, in what really happened in the real world. I actually looked that up afterwards because I was intrigued by that and went, oh, that happened. So where do you stand? We heard what Harry said, but do you view it as, yeah, it's just based on, or do you say, I did some work on Williams Jennings Bryan? A three-time candidate for president, by the way.
I totally agree with my esteemed colleague from Chicago, in his assessment of sort of how to approach work that is inspired by actual events, versus, say, a biopic or a biography of someone's life. I often feel when we're portraying real people on stage or people inspired by real people, we're really looking microscopically at a moment of high tension and high stakes in these people's lives and careers. And really, in this play, as much as it is about this relationship between these two lawyers and maybe a friendship that has fallen away, it's really an issue-based play. And I think there's a giant proposal that the authors are making about freedom of thought that I think is more than any historical accuracy. So I think taking the weight of who were these actual people, and as Henry said, looking to what the author's intention is, and the marriage of those two things to make the most high stakes, most theatrical, exciting choices. Some of those things happen to also share a Venn diagram with actual events from these men's lives, and I think that's one of those, like, truth is stranger than fiction moments. And I think those are exciting, and I think that's really a smart dramatic choice on the part of the playwrights to take these moments from these men's lives that feel like they need, or that they could share some theatrical space with the thing that they're trying to say as playwrights.
Well, then I'll come back with a performance question related to that, since you all have gone in a way that I certainly respect. But Henry, let me come to you first on that as well. So you've heard what your leading actors have said. I have two questions for you, but the first is, do you say, yeah, that's right. I, Henry, did not go and study the John T. Scopes monkey trial because that wasn't the point. Or did you say, no, I did a little homework on that?
No, I 100% agree with them. I think there is a great deal of world building that we do based on the play. A couple of people that I respect tremendously, great colleagues, Susan Booth and David Cromer, talk a lot about there are basically three time periods in which we as artists, creative, theater artists have to consider a play. The time in which it was written, the time period that it's about, and the time period that we're living in. It's hard to do that if you really, really get stuck in trying to create, even if it is based on a historical event. I think that it does a disservice to the play to try to be super specific about the time period. That's not where we are. To make it resonate with audiences today, I think we have to create a world in which they see themselves represented, Without making anything up. I mean, that's the crazy thing about this play at this time is certainly our production is that we didn't change the words. We didn't update it. And part of the rationale for me of actually having it look period, i.e. 1925, when the Scopes Monkey Trial took place, was that so that audiences today could go, holy moly, that's almost 100 years ago, literally almost 100 years ago. And those words sound like what we are saying today.
Yeah. Well, I agree. We're going to talk about that clearly, the ties to today, because you can't walk out. And I mean, I heard amongst other audience members, my own dialogue was like, this is today. Make a few modifications, but this is today. And in fact, William Jennings Bryan himself, which was, I mean, your character, Alex, I think is more of a Christian fundamentalist than Jennings was. But it just takes it to the extreme. Henry, one more casting question for you before I come back to them, which is, I think, first of all, the casting here is amazing. I mean, Larry Grimm from Red Orchid Theater, but even in the understudy world where you have friends like Alex Benito Rodriguez and people who are stars in and of themselves and part of the ensemble here, and you have a deaf actor who, you know, I'm assuming that's not in the script. So it's as though you, the Goodman, and maybe Chicago in general, just has a more open eye towards a wider net in casting. In other words, and Harry said this, it's like, you know, you don't have to be, well, you didn't actually say this, Harry, but you know, it's not as though the character is African American, so therefore it must be played by an African American. Lin-Manuel Miranda's taught us that. So, well, tell us about the casting here a little bit, and the wide net that you cast to make sure that there's representation.
Yeah, I just think that's always important for me. One of my great mentors long ago, Luis Valdez, taught me that, you know, when you get your foot in the door, you know, it's important to keep your foot stuck in the door so that other people could come in behind it, you know, because until all things are equal or more equal. But I also think it enriches the storytelling. You know, I think that every terrific actor that's cast in this play is cast because they are terrific actors. And their identities, I think, for me, just help to amplify the storytelling. The fact that Robert Schleifer, who is a deaf actor, who I've worked with many times, is playing the bailiff is interesting, right? I mean, here's the officer of the court who should always be impartial. And the fact that he's deaf, I think, is kind of interesting to me. You know, I wish that.
Did you seek that? I mean, did you say to yourself, I want to have a deaf actor in the show, or did you say, I want my bailiff to be a deaf actor?
You know, I just always look for opportunities to have inclusion be part of the storytelling, and I've worked with Robert many times. And aside from these two gentlemen on the screen, Robert was the next person that I knew without even considering him auditioning that I wanted him to be part of the production. But yes, so I thought, where can the possibility of Robert be? And I just went, there it is.
Yeah. And it's such a very present role with lots of interaction. And I love the fact that there's no character who is like, I don't understand him, right? I mean, we don't have any of that to deal with. Everybody understands how to work with that. We all can take a lesson from that. So, Harry, so given the fact that you take these characters as characters and not historical figures, totally get that. I'm on board with that. But then I kind of wonder when you take a role and Lord knows, look, you've done a lot, Justice League, Man of Steel, Batman, Superman, you know the film world and stuff as well. And Alex, I'm going to come to you with this as well. But in this particular endeavor, your role has previously been played by, you know, actors who never seemed to make it. You know, like Spencer Tracy and Jack Lemmon and Melvin Douglas just could never get a foothold in the acting. Now, these are
Kirk
the
Douglas, Kirk Douglas, Paul.
and Kirk Douglas. So these are the greats, right? And
Right.
Alex, you had that too with Ed Begley and George C. Scott. And I mean, unbelievable. And by the way, even the ensemble of actors back when you go back to the movie, you had Dick York and Harry Morgan. I mean, they all had
Crazy.
greats back then. But my question for you, Harry, is did you go back and say, I'm going to watch some of those performances of this character? Or is every role, no matter what you're doing, it's a Harry Lennox role?
Paul, you know, you bring up a sore point for me. You know, two of my very favorite actors, by the way, they both played Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in movies a few years apart. I think for which at least Frederick March, who originated the movie with Brady. Anyway, you know, these are magnificent. I can't get them out of my head, and so my entire half of my process was trying to remember what Spencer Tracy did or how he sounded, you know. So I dare not look at the film, you know, in any kind of recent thing, because I would have probably done a more accurate.
Alex, what about you? Did you go back, or did you do what Harry did and just say, I don't want that stuff in my head?
I never, ever, ever go back and watch anything of any, you know, titans of, as you're pointing out, Paul, you know, titans of the acting field, personal acting heroes have played Brady for sure.
And you do that on Broadway as well, by the way, when, I mean, with, you know, you've done
Just
Assassins
never.
and Sweeney Todd, you're not going to worry about who else has done this.
No. I mean, to me, it's like separating out being a fan from a craftsman. You know, it's like you can be a fan of something and watch it 1,000 times and have the, you know, every inflection memorized, as I do with many of the things that I watched growing up. And then the minute Henry calls and says, you're going to do Brady and Inherit the Wind, I'm like, great. That means I just read the text and work with my cast and
I love it.
director and collaborate, you know, and make my own version of it so that I can understand it. That would be the only path, from my opinion, that's the only path to like a truthful performance, is figuring out how, what is your point of view through the lens of this process and this production.
Well, those are great actors. Those are great answers, because I mean, for you to say, yes, I'm trying to be like Spencer Tracy. I'm Frederick March. Yeah, what's the point? you're
Only they can be those guys. Like,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
it. So.
So Henry, when it came to selecting this show, I was so excited when I saw this. Susan Booth, I mean, you know, listen, Robert Fall's a legend without question. Susan Booth has come in such a strong way. And her season, I mean, the Color Purple at the end of the season, could have never saw that coming, seen that coming for a Goodman season. Talk about Inherit the Wind. Did you pick this because it is in many ways just such a classic, or did you pick it because it has a message for today?
I think mostly the latter. Susan and I were having lunch one day, and we were talking about favorite plays, and this one I came up for me, because it's the first play I ever saw produced, as a ninth grader, and you know, it set me on the road. And then when we met about, she asked me to direct something in the season, and we met to start talking about what that could be. We both. And we knew that it was going to be this slot in the season, and we both acknowledged that we couldn't ignore where we were in our country, you know, and the election that was
I
happening.
was going to say, in an upcoming election, too. Yeah.
But we both also knew that we didn't have an interest in beating people over the head with it. That if we wanted to talk about things that were important, we needed to make sure that it was to everyone and not just one particular side of the aisle or the fence, you know? And I think that this play does that in a big-hearted way. It brings up things that I think are important to all Americans, frankly, to all human beings, which is, you know, our inherent right to think. The thing that, as Harry says, as you know, as Drummond in the trial, you know, that you can't, we cannot deny the one thing that sets us apart from every other living creature on this planet, and that is our ability to think. You know, and I think, depending on where you know, stand on the political or religious spectrum, you may have your opinions about that, but it's undeniable, I think, to everyone, that we should have that right. So, yeah, this play kind of, and it's big-hearted, and that was important to me as well. And it's Chicago. It kind of has a strong Chicago, you know, kind of feel, and I love that.
Did you, and of course, picking Harry as a Chicago guy and Alex, but I mean, were they in your mind when you started talking about this, or you decided we'll do the play now? Gee, who shall we cast?
I'm sorry, I have to break good real quick. Alex Gimignani wore a Mets hat yesterday, so I don't know about all this giving them Chicago guys.
So, Alex, you've done your final performance, and congratulations on that.
Let's go Mets. That's all I will say.
At least he had the good taste not to wear it today, right?
Yes. Exactly.
Or that cowboy hat that Henry Godinez wore.
Wait a minute, but that's football. We can't talk about it. It's too early in the season.
No.
And that's from growing up, you know. I mean, we're talking Bob Lilly, you know, yeah, the old days. Anyway, yeah, absolutely. Especially Harry, you know. I mean, Alex, I was fortunate to have in my pocket because we worked together year before last on Big Fish at the Marriott. He's
Right.
my colleague here at Northwestern. Harry is someone I've known and greatly admired for 3 decades or more. You know, I like to tell people we grew up together here in the theater community, but never had a chance to work together. And he's one of my heroes.
And one
Not
of you followed the other one to Northwestern, so I won't say who's older, but somebody
I
followed
think I
somebody.
followed him. Yeah, I'm not as smart as Harry. I could never have been admitted here. They only let me teach here.
Believe it.
but yeah, no, and so I did have Harry in my mind from the get-go. Susan and I both did, because Harry is one of the most, you know, morally grounded people I know. And I felt, and he's freaking awesome actor, you know, and all of that in Chicago. So it was this beautiful, you know, just concert of things that Harry has that I knew were going to be perfect for this role.
Indeed,
And darn it, I was determined to work with him before, you know, I had to move on. So.
and so, Harry, when you got offered the role, I'll ask Alex the same thing. When you got offered the role, we've just talked about sort of there's the purpose of the play and the purpose for when it was written back in 1955. But that was also in the world of McCarthy. I mean, it wasn't like there weren't political things going on then. But I'm sort of curious, when you looked at this, Harry, I'll just start with you. Did you look and understand the import for today, or was that not an issue for you when you accepted this? What is it, just such a juicy role?
Well, I think, by the way, you mentioned the word purpose, and I think it was after the performance in Purpose that Henry offered me the role. I'm pretty sure, right? Or was it at the Goodman? I can't remember. I think it was in Purpose. He said, "I want you to think about playing this. You know, don't answer me right now." I said, "Well, you know, you had me at hello, really, but I had to check some schedules." Fortunately and unfortunately, there's not much going on in Hollywood. So, are you all still hearing me?
We do hear you. Your picture's
Keep
frozen, but we
signing
hear you,
off.
so it's okay.
Hello?
We hear you.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Yeah,
Right.
anyway, I was immediately interested, of course, because of the movie Staying With Me, which I first encountered in seminary. You know, they wanted us to see this movie as we studied, you know,
Wow.
to be priests and so forth, because of the debate between faith and reason. Of course, the Catholic Church has always tried to unify those two things. It is not any kind of fundamentalist or evangelical church. But that said, I was immediately in love with the idea and the opportunity to come back home and rock Schulfer's last season with now my one time classmate at Northwestern, Susan Booth, being the artistic director. It was like, how do you say no to that? So it just all lined up.
You can't. And I saw Rock and Mary last night. They're still around a lot. retirement's got nothing to do with it. Alex, how about you? How important was the purpose of doing this? Or you just love working in Chicago as well?
Well, as a new Chicago resident, you know, or even just not being living as a performer and actor in this universe, to do a play at the Goodman has been a bucket list item for me for as long as I knew it existed. So, when Henry asked me to do this, I mean, I think my first words were like, yes. And then, you know, had to check the calendar and see how it all was working out. But I mean, it was only after the fact, when I started spending time with the text, that I thought a little more deeply about how audiences might receive this, the argument at the center of this play. You know, I had such a great time working with Henry on Big Fish, so that was a no-brainer. Harry is a legend. I'm like in, like, basically there was not a reason to not do it. So, and then to also, everything was sort of icing on an already exciting cake, you know. Yeah, it was an easy thing to say yes to, for sure, and I'm thrilled that it worked out the way it did.
By the way, Harry, because of my other TV world of politics, I interview lots of politicians, like some who are named Jackson. That's why I made it clear that the Jackson is not, might look like them, but it's not. Although I did ask at least one of them, have you seen the show? The answer was no.
Yeah, I quite agree, by the way, Paul, that we make a point to have Reverend Jackson as a figure in the show to distinguish between the family on stage and the one that people draw a natural and understandable reference to. But we're not the Jackson family. But I understand their
Right.
concerns.
And that's a show I kept sending people to go see. That was amazing. But we're not here to talk about that. But Henry, back on this, so I'm sort of curious, because I imagine you're there on several nights. I know some directors disappear. You probably don't. But what are you hearing from audience members? I mean, again, opening night when I was there, you walk out and you're just stunned by the importance of that show today, especially in the world I live in, of covering politics. What do you hear from audience members on their way out?
I definitely hear that. I don't go every night. I've been about once a week or so since we opened, mostly because there are lots of lawyer groups, Paul, coming to see the show. Last night,
Exactly.
I think we had three different law firm groups yesterday, and actually, our courtroom consultant, the great Matt Pierce, was our courtroom consultant, and his firm came last night, and I went and spoke with them prior to the show, so I stayed and watched. But I do hear a lot that, oh my gosh, this is like still going on, or when was this play written? But I think my favorite comment that I overheard, and it wasn't even overheard, they actually told me, and it made my whole week, was at a preview when these two women were sitting behind me, and I, as I walked out, I at the end I said, "Hey, y'all, thanks for coming." And they were like, thank you for making it so even." They felt that the argument was very even and level, and not vilifying any particular point of view. And honestly, that was the best compliment I've gotten, because that was absolutely my objective.
And Harry, one of the things that I love, and I don't have to tell you or Alex, you know this, you performed here so much. Chicago audiences, I mean, there are so many directors and producers, as you know, who try out their world premieres here in Chicago. You learn so much from Chicago audiences. Harry, your thoughts about, do you find Chicago audiences as sophisticated as I think we are?
Oh yes, quite. For example, I think that Chicago's the bellwether theater city, certainly in the United for the United States. We've been talking about Purpose a little bit. I don't know that Purpose could have opened in New York and then come to Chicago, but it could
But we
open in
did send it
Chicago.
there. We are
Yes,
sending
we
it
sent
there.
it there, and there was a phrase that with the great Felicia Rashad's press agent said. She said, "The hottest show in New York right now is in Chicago." So, and I think that that happens from time to time. The Goodman has a long reputation of being, the first city, and this, of course, is Broadway or what have you, American theater tradition. This was one of the cities. This is where August Wilson did his plays, certainly before taking it to other places. That always had to connect with Chicago. I think that we really are. There used to be a phrase in politics, Paul, you know it. As Chicago votes, so votes the nation. If you won Chicago, then you were likely to win the presidency. And for example, 1960 with
I would say,
Richard.
just ask Richard J. Daley that question.
That's right.
And
So
by the
yeah,
way, I remember,
I love it.
and during the August Wilson days, because we did a play a year, the Goodman did a play a year, he was here. And I remember getting to meet him, and what an honor and treasure that was. Alex, again, you do Broadway, whatever, but is Chicago like this is, do, does, do our audiences teach you anything?
I don't think I've done enough in Chicago to answer that question
Right.
accurately. I know that it is a warm reception. I know that it is a listening, thinking audience, which I deeply appreciate, especially when it's a play that requires deep listening and thinking. And so that's really my experience. I've done two things here, one in the city of Chicago and one out in the boondocks at the Marriott. And that's definitely a very different audience than the Chicago audience at the Goodman. I have not, had a ton of experience performing in Chicago. This is my first time performing in the city of Chicago as a member of the community. I was here several years ago with Hamilton, which has a very specific, beautiful, but I definitely was not a resident of Illinois at that point. So, I mean, my experience, although limited with Chicago audiences, is that they're deep listeners, deep thinkers, and that's wonderful. That's just a wonderful way to engage with the theater. And it matters to this community that their theater is good and compelling. And what else can you really ask?
I take great pride in that, to be honest with you. I'm so glad you guys feel the way you do. We're going to wrap. But Henry, by the way, is this one that might see a day on Broadway one day?
Well, Harry's working on that for us. That would be, you know, the truth is I wish that we could do this throughout the country. I think I would love so many people to see it. So who knows? I hope so.
Can you work a couple of numbers in there for Alex to sing?
Seriously, you know, yeah, a little Rock of Ages.
And my other gripe, by the way, is that the mutual friend that Henry and I have, Richard Gabriel, we have been jury. He is a jury consultant. I was for many years. Richard and I worked in the OJ case together, part of the jury, the dream team and all of that. We've got quite the history. If that interests anybody, we can talk about that someday. But Henry, I want to just say I'm offended that you didn't write a jury consultant into the script so I could work with Harry and essentially help pick that jury in a prologue or something.
I know. Well, when we take it to Broadway, Paul, I think that's a great idea.
I like the way you think, Henry. Gentlemen, thank you so much. This is such an amazing play, and I'm so thrilled that we got this to work out for us to get together. I asked for all of you, and the fact that you all made time to do this is just amazing. The show is running through October 20th, and that's it, Henry, right?
Yes, as far as we know, because we got to get the house ready for Christmas Carol. What can
exactly.
I say?
Exactly. I just interviewed Larry Yando the other day, of course, who's doing Harry Potter. So everybody, you know, we all come back eventually to the Goodman. But so it only goes till October 20th. GoodmanTheater.org is where you get tickets. Theater spelled the proper British way, T-R-E. I always think that's very important. GoodmanTheater.org. Gentlemen, continue to break legs. Henry, congratulations on directing just such an amazing, amazing show. I got a million other questions to talk to you about, but you have matinees to do. So I thank you for your time. Hope to see you all again soon. And I appreciate your time. Break legs, everybody.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you so much, Paul. Thanks so much.